Greetings from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in the original form. You're tuned in to The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and selfishness went wrong, and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of insight, aimed at making each of us more responsible, more cooperative with others, and more aware of those spiritual bonds that connect us to each other, no matter what we find to bicker about now. You can call us toll-free if you want to participate. And from the United States, that number is 877-876-5227. From Canada, the number is 888-810-8322. Or you can call us direct to 530-876-3222. Now, this show is carried online, but you may also be able to get it on the air in your local area. So to find out if one of those old-fashioned on-the-air stations in your area carries this show, just contact us at bbsradio.com. The website for this show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at spiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All past shows become available as soon as is humanly or even extra-humanly possible on the station archives. Now, my own blog is titled How the Neocons Stole Freedom, and is conveniently located at howtheneoconsstolefreedom.blogspot.com. Last Monday, the Reality Caucus, which I've talked about before, sent out the letters to all the declared presidential candidates. Those letters included a job application for the position of president and a form to be filled out. And now we are eagerly awaiting the results to find out who is going to be nice and send in their form and who is not going to be nice. Now, you can go to the Reality Caucus website, and from there you can get to the Getting Presidential Reality site. For the last several days, I have been finding out all different sorts of things about the presidential candidates. First, how their sites work, why things bounce when they're sent to the address on their site, locating the mysteriously mobile campaign offices, and various other things about their campaigns and the people who work in their offices, which are certainly enlightening. Life is always full of surprises. But I suggest that you go take a look, because getting presidential reality is something that we really all need. And because they treat it so much like it's a horse race, you can almost just see them as they stand there at those forums going with a little bit in their teeth, pawing and looking so eager to get into the Oval Office, and then they're just sort of off and running. The horse race of presidential politics just keeps going on and on and on. Does it ever end? They're just unabashedly, the candidates continue to talk endlessly about how good it is going to be when one of them, always the one talking, is firmly in control. But it would be much more satisfying, wouldn't it, if they actually demonstrated in advance what they talk about so easily. And that is, of course, the whole idea of the Reality Caucus, reframing our expectations to better match what America needs to survive and prosper in a world where everything you do is limited and controlled by someone else, usually someone from government or from a corporation. For the moment, let's consider what's wrong with the whole idea of a corporation. Corporations get all of the advantages of being people without the liability of dying off and eliminating themselves from the mix. Perpetual persons, they have worked hard to ensure that they do not have perpetual liability. You may be aware that liquid natural gas is now beginning to be imported to the United States. That did not even begin. The corporations did not invest a centavo until they had persuaded Congress to zero out the potential liability for accidents. Accidents in this frame of reference include terrorist activities. So, if you live anywhere nearby one of those depots off California or Massachusetts, you could literally be fried alive with all your loved ones and the corporation who is profiting from the stuff that fueled the fire, if it was set off by a cell phone or an intentional explosion, would simply call its insurance company to be reimbursed. You, of course, get nothing, and neither do your heirs. The profit on this kind of con game is not calculated in the millions or the billions. That's small change. For this kind of thing, you really have to use big numbers. Think trillions of dollars. If you pay a phone bill, use electricity, pump gas into your car, have a mortgage, use a credit card, connect to the internet, get television through cable, pay a property tax bill, or do almost anything else, you're what we call stapled to the grid. You may twitch, you may wiggle, but getting off that grid is as hard as they can possibly make it. Today we're going to talk about living in war zone America. Investigating the candidates for president is a first step to understanding that landscape, the world as it has been recreated to ensure a continuing stream of income for those who, left unsupervised, change the rules and law in America. Candidates will be investigated. You can bet that many of the horses in that herd wear the corporate brand. America needs a president who rides for the brand we know as freedom. This time, we need to choose right or else. The caucus is one of our subjects tonight from War Zone America. That zone of involvement stretches from Baghdad to Berkeley and beyond. How we confront, how we change direction, how we understand where we're going and how to put on the brakes and who is right for the job are those are some of the questions we're going to consider. But that's just a few of them. Our guest on this venture into the tenacious world of war and greed is a grandmother from Berkeley, California, who has seen war played out in Iraq and elsewhere. As a correspondent for the iconoclast in Texas, Ms. Jane Stillwater brought home to America insights others missed. Ms. Stillwater describes herself as a flower child of the 60s. She spent her life working for justice and change and raising kids. Age brings many things. With the wrinkles comes wisdom if you spend your time well. Please welcome Jane Stillwater. Jane, are you there?
Hi, Melinda.
Hi, how
After
are you doing?
After an introduction like that, I feel like I should be start singing the theme from Hair or at least a couple of Grateful Dead songs. But
Well, feel free if you want to do that. But we're so glad you could be with us today and so that we can talk about some of these exciting things, some of the things that you saw in Baghdad in the Green Zone, and coming and going, and the things that you have experienced in your own life, raising kids and accumulating the wisdom that, you know, makes you who you are today. But we always begin by asking our guests just to tell us something about themselves, because you're a grandma, you've got kids, and your kids have kids. So why don't you tell us about that?
Well, I didn't intentionally set out to be a mother. I really didn't know what I intentionally set out to do, but I have four children. And then after I did that, I turned to something else. I started writing. I'd always been a writer. I always wanted to write, but I started writing seriously in 2000 when George Bush stole the 2000 election. And at that point, I had been living in a housing co-op, and there were these people in the housing co-op that just kept using the co-op for their own interests. And so finally I stopped them and I went, geez Louise, if I can stop these people, then I can stop George Bush. Well, I'm still trying to stop George Bush. I'm still trying to put him in jail. And not only that, but all the people that I'd stopped at the co-op all came back into power again. But I'm optimistic and I'm hopeful and I have ideas and I have plans, and I'm not going to be put off or stopped. I want a better world. And, you know, the spiritual politician says it all. We have a better world in mind and we need it and we want it. And if you sell your soul for power or money or greed, or whatever you sell your soul for, the bottom line is you don't have a soul anymore, and that's not right.
That's right, because if you sell it, you can't continue to have it.
Exactly.
which of course makes you vacant inside, which is not the way you really want anybody to be. That inner vacancy is something to be avoided. That's not the way to lose weight, just in case you wondered. But you had some amazing experiences over there, and getting over there was also an interesting experience.
I did. Last June, I decided that I wanted to go to Iraq because I didn't trust what I was reading in the papers. I didn't trust what was going on. I wanted to see for myself. And it was an outrageous plan, but I did it. And I wrote back, to the Department of Defense, and I said, I want to come. And they wrote back saying, we don't take bloggers, which is totally untrue, because there's been a blogger over there for over a year, Michael Yon. So that wasn't the reason. So I got my Senator Boxer and a Congressman Lee involved, and they were fed this line that I was opinion-based and not fact-based. And I went, no, wait a minute. George Bush is fact-based? I don't think so. So that didn't stop me. So finally, the 2008 November election happened, and the handwriting was on the wall. The Congress was going Democratic. They couldn't keep out the progressives much longer. And the people that run the press center in Baghdad are really good guys, and they're trying to tap into the progressive bloggers because they realize that this is a whole new market or a whole new place to get their stories out. So they weren't blocking me, but somehow I was getting blocked. And so finally, in March, and it's been almost a year, I said, forget this. I'm just coming over there, and if they don't let me in, I'll sleep on the beach in Kuwait City for 3 weeks. So when I arrived, they came and picked me up, and they took me to the Green Zone. But I was in the Green Zone for two whole weeks, and they never let me out of the Green Zone.
Mm-hmm.
And for what reasons, I don't know. I think it was because Baghdad is so incredibly dangerous at this point in time, and they didn't want their blogging grandma to get blown up.
That would be so awkward for them.
I know.
But you found out a lot anyway. I think it was sort of amazing as I was reading your reports coming out of there, first going in and then when you were there. Your reports were so different than anybody else's I had read because they talked about things. There was such insight. You know, it actually describing what the eating was like was fascinating, talking to the contractors and what the contractors' expectations were. The fact that you identified that what we had all experienced as prosperity and hope in the 50s is still exists for Americans, but only if they happen to be working for Halliburton.
Exactly. And not only that, but I found out something that amazed me about the Green Zone, what it actually is. It's, you know, they say the Green Zone. Well, what's the alternative to the Green Zone is the Red Zone, which is the rest of Iraq, which apparently you don't want to go there. But the Green Zone was this area that used to be farmland or pastures on the other side of the Tigris from the rest of Baghdad. And either before Saddam or during Saddam's reign, they built a federal capital that is very much like Washington, D.C. It's got the broad avenues. It's got the monuments, the government buildings, the statues, the hotels, that whole thing. And so superimposed over this is a grid similar to, say, Fort Lewis or Fort Benning or Fort Bragg. So it's bizarre. You have it's part tree-lined capital and part army base, and it's 13 square miles broad, and it's totally, totally, totally walled off from the rest of Iraq. And to go, like, I went down to the Rashid Hotel, which is two blocks away from where I stayed at the press room.
Uh-huh. And that's inside the Green Zone?
That's inside the Green Zone. To get to the Al Rashid, you have to pass through seven security checks, two body searches, and two x-ray machines. So the Green Zone is very well guarded, very well protected. So when the bomb went off in the Parliament building,
Which is inside the green zone.
Which is inside the green zone. I really don't know how they did it. And I don't know why they did it either, because blowing up your own people. I mean, I can see why people would say, oh, well, you know, the Americans are the occupiers. But to blow up Iraqis, it just seems inhuman. I mean, the whole, they took their cue from George Bush. George Bush went into Iraq, and he did the Virginia Tech number on it. And so these people that are Iraqis blowing up Iraqis, they've lost it. The shock and awe caused them to just go over the edge, and now they're terrorists. And thank you, George Bush.
Yeah, so where there wasn't terrorism, now we have it.
Right, exactly.
And, of course, they can't get over here, because so what they're doing is that they're venting over there.
Yeah, right, exactly. And it's just painful. And I never got out of the green zone. So I've got unfinished business over there, and I really want to go back. And I just want to say I set foot in the red zone. So this journalist emailed me and said that she'd come up with the airfare. So I'm negotiating with CPIC, which is the Combined Center Press Information Center in the green zone, to give me permission to do another embed, so I can go over there and actually say I was in the red zone.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more things that you want to report about in the red zone.
Yeah, exactly. And I also want to talk to the Iraqis. There's hardly any Iraqis at all in the green zone.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a military base on the United States. And if they do have Iraqis over there, they're either translators or they're cleaning the bathrooms.
So that's what you saw, translating and cleaning the bathrooms.
Yeah.
What kind of people are actually, of course, we've seen the whole process of privatization going on in the U.S. military. Who is doing jobs that you saw?
There's at least one contractor for every troop. You know how the Quartermaster Corps used to do stuff and the KP people used to do stuff? All that is now being done by contractors. And there's contractors everywhere. The most commonly spoken language in the Green Zone is Spanish, because they have everything is guarded by security teams from Peru.
From Peru.
It's amazing. And they're wonderful people. They're really nice. I'm glad they've got these jobs. But it's just real different from what you would think that war would be like. And I also heard that there are mercenaries, because I hadn't seen any mercenaries, but I have talked to reporters who have talked to the mercenaries, the socialists.
And where are the mercenaries generally from?
I don't know. Apparently they stay someplace else in this area. This place is called, jokingly called, Area 51, and it's named for this. There was a science fiction book that was talking about Roswell, New Mexico, and
right.
And Area 51 was the area where the spooks, or the people that guarded the aliens lived. But anyway, you don't mess around with Area 51. From what I've heard, they will come and burn down your house. So I don't even go there. We don't want to talk about Area 51, do we?
Oh, really? That bad, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Scary.
And you know, the mercenary armies. The thing is that I have heard, and this that the bills to cut off the money to Iraq, to cut off the troop money to Iraq, apparently don't cover the money that's going to the mercenaries, to the private armies, but I could be wrong on that.
Those are supposedly being funded directly through the corporations?
I think they might be government funded.
really.
But
that isn't really what you would expect. You would expect that they would at least be.
It would be what they expect, because the neocons would want their private armies.
Well, then, when you say neocons, though, are you talking about the U.S. government, or are you talking about the corporates?
Because there's a huge difference between those two things. I can't remember the article offhand, but I think they're talking about the government. But this is an area that I wasn't able to get into. What I was able to learn over there was the combat support hospital is really excellent. Some of the best trauma hospital in the world. I was there when the parliament building was bombed, and they brought in the parliamentarians, and they were just gurneys all over of people covered with blood and burns, and it was like a scene out of Dante's Inferno, and I would never, that more than anything turned me anti-war.
As if you hadn't already been.
Well, when I had gone over there, I had seen some of the good things that the troops were doing, like protecting the grid, for speaking of grids, protecting the electricity thing, because the terrorists or insurgents or whoever they were going after the electrical power, and you know the Americans were helping there. And when I talked to these two lady parliamentarians, they said basically that there was all these Americans and kidnappers and mafia and insurgents and terrorists and al-Qaeda and all these people, men with guns, fighting each other all up here. And then way down here were the average people of Iraq who were just trying to get their kids to school, get themselves to jobs, and
live,
a lot
pay
of
the
way,
mortgage.
Yeah, well, whatever. But, yeah, just like we do over here. And they were
so they're trying
horrified
to do it
by all this war that was going on above them. And they thought in a lot of ways that the Americans protected them, but in a lot of other ways, the Americans were not allowing all this bloodshed to come to an end by their being there for occupation.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, they're building up a tremendous backload of animosity, because goodness knows what will happen when we leave.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw what happened in Vietnam when we left.
Yeah.
And, of course, that raises other issues, and that's certainly one of the justifications you can see is going to be used for staying.
Yes, but the thing is, they say if we leave, there'll be a bloodbath. Guess what? There's a bloodbath now. So there's a lot of ifs and maybes and buts, but what I'm thinking is that, you know, when you have bad guys in your neighborhood, you have a neighborhood watch, and they need to instigate this on the local level where the people themselves can be a neighborhood watch, which is what they're trying to do with these joint security stations. But I don't think they're working all that well, because they're just pissing off the insurgents. And it's become even more of a battle. But on the level of the Middle East is just falling into chaos. The Middle East itself needs to form its own neighborhood watch. Saudi Arabia, Syria, Jordan, Egypt, even Iran, especially Iran, Turkey, need to all get together and form this neighborhood watch with the Iraqis and help stabilize over there. And America, the EU, Russia, China, they're allowed to bring refreshments to the neighborhood watch meetings, but they can't run the show. They just can't because there's too much resentment.
What did you see that what medium do you think could be used to enable them? Is there anything that could be done, if not by America, because of the level of animosity there by another nation who might be able to come in or individuals, and provide some sort of way for people to transition and get back on their own feet.
That's what I'm thinking that the role of, you know, the neighbors could be, like Saudis and the Iranians. You know, it's a matter of trust. We have to trust and the Iraqis. We have to, you know, at some point you just have to let go of your babies and trust that that they have good sense over there. They're all they're very highly educated. Iraqis are you know, their colleges are excellent, and also
And so a lot of the things that we hear is, you know, about them are certainly the mythology. They're not true at all.
No, they're not.
They actually, I think, had a higher level of PhDs than we have over here, for instance.
Yeah, and the Iraqi parliamentarians that I talked to knew so much more, were so much more informed, etc., than me, that it was almost embarrassing for me to say, well, you know, well, let me give you some advice. Yeah, right. And they gave me advice. They were very, you know, they said, this is what we want. We want what you want. We want a stable lifestyle. We don't want to be afraid.
Mm-hmm. Well, they want all those sensible things that all of us want. I mean, we just, you know, you don't want to be ducking bullets when you're going to the 7-Eleven.
Right, exactly. And not only that, but they have the money to pay for all this stuff. The you know, their oil money.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a break. They can't afford. They have all this oil money, and these Iraqis are, you know, many of them are malnourished. And why? They've got all this money, so
it's hard to get the imports right when people are shooting. You know, it's hard to get people to bring food in.
Well, not only that, but to Halliburton and Enron and, I mean, Enron. Did I say Enron? Let me focus here. And
Enron's gone, at least, thank
you. Exxon, you know?
Exxon. Okay, Exxon.
And is just pretty much scalping Iraq. Yeah, they're scalping the American taxpayers and scalping Iraq. But before we get this neighborhood watch going, I think the American people need to make a gesture of good faith to the Iraqi people. And you know what that gesture is?
What?
Put Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld on trial and put them in jail.
Well, that sounds like fun. Do you think that they would want to do the trial over there or over here?
Ooh, let's do it over there. Good thinking. I'm down.
Well, you have to work out all the details, you know, because they're important. And I think that would be, I think, you know, where we're going to have the trial and all of the other details are things that we could work out in advance.
Okay.
Because, you know,
you and me, we'll work this out.
But that's part of actually setting, you know, changing things, is what you have to do is you have to set, well, this is how we're going to do it. And then after a while, people just assume, well, yeah, we planned that. That's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then the people who do the, like the social part of the newspapers and what have you, they could do the commentary on what people are going to wear, what's appropriate garb, and for each point through it. I mean, and then we can have commentary on if Laura Bush is going to make an appearance in court, what she's going to wear.
Yeah.
Because we want it to be something everybody can identify with.
Well, yeah, and it'd be another media circus. The media would love it. Think of all the newspapers they sell. Go for it, girl.
I guess, and I think there would be a lot of value in that, because you have to give people an ability to understand it, and if we put it in those terms, you can see how we'd be making it accessible to them.
Well, sure, absolutely. Just like the people understand law and order, the TV show, they'd say, oh, my goodness, yeah, well, they can relate. They can say, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then
we have
can
a
have
bad
questions.
Guy. He destroyed a country. He's responsible for the death of 1 million people. We'll put him on jail, and what's his name, Shark, can get him convicted.
Mm-hmm. We could actually pick who's going to be the defense attorney for him.
Yeah, should it be, what's the name of that guy on Law and Order, or should it be the guy on Boston Legal? This is a,
yes.
Yeah, we got to work this out. This is
yeah, this would be, and this would be fun to work out. And yeah. You know, people laugh about it, but the fact is, if you lay down an expectation that way, it's amazing how often reality follows.
Yeah.
Because so much about the way the world is exactly on that level. It's what do people expect, and have now that they expect it, how do they figure out a way to make it work? It's like if you've ever, and you're a mom, so you've had the experience of telling your kids, no, you can't do that, and then they did it anyway.
Yeah.
And you would be astounded because you couldn't figure out how they did it.
Or
but if you don't tell kids that something's impossible, it's amazing how possible everything is.
That's true. That's a good point. But also, it's like people learn new stuff from what they already know. So if you want somebody to learn something new, you associate it with what they already know. They already know TV trials. They're ready. And I'm ready. I want to see George Bush in jail. I want to come visit George Bush in jail. And I'll bake him a cake, but it won't have a file in it.
Well, that would be very nice. It would be a cake or cookies.
Girl Scout cookies. Did I tell you that my daughter's Girl Scout troop sold 60,000 boxes of Girl Scout cookies? It was just, it was craziness. We just stood in front of the Berkeley BART station, in front of UC California, in front of the Berkeley Bowl Marketplace, and sold Girl Scout cookies. And we did it 3 weeks a year for 10 years, and then we made enough money, and we went off on a Caribbean cruise.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's some Girl Scout cookie sale.
So
I wish I could say I had done that. But I was always glad that one, we sold more than the cookies that we had somehow.
Well, yeah, you had 5 kids.
Oh gosh, yes, and 3 of them were girls, so we did a lot of that. And it was great fun, of course. It was selling the calendars that was hard.
Yeah, nobody wants the nuts. Nobody wants to buy the calendars or the nuts. But
yeah. Well,
if George Bush goes to jail, I promised that I would send him some Girl Scout cookies. Oh, and I just loved going to Combat Support Hospital because they always had, people always sent them Girl Scout cookies, so I could always count on going over there and getting some Thin Mints.
Oh, God. You know, everybody loves the Thin Mints best. I was just talking to somebody the other day, and they said exactly the same thing, that the Thin Mints were their favorite.
Yeah, here we are. Radical, almost revolutionary, but we still like our Girl Scout cookies. Go us.
Well, yes, of course, because you have to keep your priorities very clearly lined up. And the Girl Scout cookies always come really close to the top of the list for me. I don't know about you.
Not only that, but what people don't understand is that we who are fighting for the Constitution, who are fighting for our military, which is being decimated, by the way, we are the patriots. We are the ones that are the true patriots, and we fight for American, and what's more American than Girl Scout cookies?
That's for sure. And you just sort of wonder about these people sometimes. By the way, have you noticed how you haven't seen a sort of a military age Bush in sight since this whole thing began?
You mean
they just sort of keep them out of view?
Oh, the Bush sons, yes.
The Bush sons, and you don't even hear much about the daughters.
No, except they're off in Paraguay buying land for when they have to, when their dad goes to jail.
Yes, well, one thinks that could have something to do with, you know, the idea that might happen. I think that, though, that Paraguay, of course, doesn't, you know, you can't get somebody, you can't extract them from Paraguay.
No.
So that's probably one of the issues of having the land there.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, when you take a look at what they've done to America in so many different directions, it's just simply mind-boggling. What I said earlier about the grids, it's so true. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't look any way without seeing a place that we've been taken advantage of. And that's why, you know, when I looked at the fact that you had been over there, when you come over here, you're fighting a lot of the same battles.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that Bush is not in jail is mind-boggling, because there's so much proof of so many things that he's done that have been illegal, immoral, and or fattening. And it's just, how does he do it?
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Because
how does he remain in power?
Well, and of course you see how he remains in power when the fact is you would need somebody willing to impeach. And we've seen what happened. I mean, Kucinich actually, filed. You know, he presented the bill, and everybody stares around and says, well, who's going to do something about that? It's simply not happening. And no matter what any of us say, and no matter who tried how hard to change the makeup of Congress, it hasn't made any difference.
Yeah.
And that's kind of one of the things I think is sort of frightening for people. If the process that's there can't work because it's been truncated, what do? It's very sad.
You just strap on your grandma's shoes and your little old lady's shoes and go off to Iraq, or you do whatever you can at a local level, or you do what you do. You know, you have this. You start with your radio show and you try to convince people that what they are told is not what reality is. And you know, some of these right wingers are just, they would rather believe that their mother was an axe murderer than George Bush was a bad guy. And they're just so set on this idea that what they are told on TV is correct and right and real, and that the Ohio election wasn't stolen, and that the Florida election wasn't stolen. And that the person in the White House is violating his lease, the United States Constitution, because you have to be elected to live there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you take a look at the whole thing. I mean, he didn't just steal this last election. He stole the 2000 election too.
Absolutely. That's what got me started as a blogger.
And when you take a look at all of those different things and you realize it and you sort of let it sink into the bones, it also kind of chills you to the bone.
Yeah.
Because when there's that lack of respect for the whole process, you just have to start asking yourself, what are they going to do next? I mean, you've seen them starting to talk about the 22nd Amendment.
Uh-huh.
And whether or not he really has to leave. The first time somebody broached that, I tell you, if I understand what chilled to the bone means.
Well, you know, that would explain a lot, because they are such a bunch of yahoos that are running on the Republican ticket. I mean, give me a break. Of that debate at the Reagan Library, would you want any of those people in the White House? No. And when McCain started getting a little bit, every time McCain starts getting a little bit popular, for God knows what reason, he is completely dunned in the press. And why don't they dun George Bush? You know, why don't they say bad things about Bush? They still aren't.
Well, because George Bush owns too much stock in the corporations.
And not only that, but, I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, you know,
I'm a grandmother. I'm entitled to do that.
We are. I mean, when you get to be our age, we are entitled to forget things occasionally, because there's so many things we really remember. And those
but
are the things that really count.
We remember.
Well, one of the things we remember is how things ought to be. I mean, you remember the book that, what's his name, that horrible fat guy who's on the radio all the time, Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
The way things ought to be, there really is a way things ought to be, and he simply didn't get right about the way it ought to be. That was the problem. Because the way things ought to be is that we ought to be running them ourselves. So instead of looking up to government, who is running around telling everybody what to do, thus increasing our transaction costs, we are making the decisions on how to do it ourselves.
Exactly.
It's like you ran into problem with your local co-op.
Right.
But it was small enough so that you could do something about it locally.
Right.
Because it was accessible. You could make their lives a murder until they stopped.
Yeah,
they did. And so it was accessible. The problem with government is that it's so large and it's so unwieldy and it doesn't even know what it's doing. That you can't possibly, it's like it's a train, but it isn't on tracks, and you can't possibly steer it because you don't have a way to steer it, and it's just going to go wherever it's going to go. And the only people who can have any influence on it at all are the ones that, sort of own it.
And not only that,
because
people go into this whole song and dance about, oh, yes, we should privatize government. But if you think you can't control government now, if you, because it has been privatized, we have even less control. And,
absolutely.
Like if they privatize the army, which they're doing right and left, we'll have even less control. They all say, well, we gotta drown all these government bureaucrats in the bathtub. Guess what? Then you'll have the shadow government that you won't even have any clue. Bring back the freaking bureaucrats. At least, at least we have some oversight.
Well, but if you're going to be, investing in a huge change, then what you want is a change that's actually going to work and give you control.
Uh-huh.
And control always should be local, right? Because that way it's accessible and you can get in, you can actually exert the control. And that's the direction a lot of people are going today, because it's been demonstrated to them that it's much too easy to hijack it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That whole states' rights thing was hijacked by the neocons.
Well, sure.
The freaking state courts were supposed to vote, and somehow it ended up in the Supreme Court, and nobody said, oh, my goodness. The right wing has just spit on states' rights? No, they didn't do that, which surprised me no end.
Well, that surprised me, and it didn't surprise me, because I looked at it and I said, it must not be convenient for them, because they always seem to manage to come out in exactly the point that they want to be on. It's like you can see that we're just sort of calibrating and moving in that direction before they even launch the argument.
Yeah.
And if you have people, the problem is when you have a group of people who have the money to hire people to sit around and figure out how to fiddle the rules so that they can benefit, so they can end up owning the store, then you're never going to be able to get the store back.
Uh-huh.
So you have to do it so it's small enough so that nobody can, that it isn't worth stealing. Because if it's small enough so it isn't worth stealing, then you don't have to worry as much about people trying to steal it.
Well,
and that could work. But, we haven't really had a good, clear example of what will work, because you can't point to any point in American past and say, well, that worked, that was really good, let's go back there.
Uh-huh.
Because there were always problems, right?
I think
grannies can do a lot.
Yeah. I think it may go back to what you were saying about the corporation being a person. That is one big thing that we could tackle. And because Halliburton, like when I was over in Iraq, the privatization was everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they did a good job, and sometimes they didn't.
Well, yeah, and I'm very negative about the idea of privatization, which, of course, has been a real journey for me, because, the guy that came up with the idea of privatization's name was Bob Poole, and he was an old friend of mine. He was actually the founder of Reason Foundation. And I gave the first book party for him when his first book came out. And I said at the time, you know, this privatization thing looks really great, but the way you've got it put together here, what it does is you're talking about making government more efficient and not making people more free. And I'm sure you've thought that through and you really know what you're doing, right? He said, right. Guess what? He hadn't thought it through. He didn't know what he was doing. Oops.
Well, we always thought, we were told that if the private industry did it, they would be more efficient. And that's not true. They're five times less efficient. Well, maybe not five times, but
instead of arguing, though, about which thing works that doesn't work works worse, the better thing is to do is, like, if you're doing a beta test on software, figure out what does work and make the system small enough so you can beta test it going up into the next level. Because otherwise the transaction costs are just devastating for all of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a concept, beta test government before you install it.
Which is what you're saying with this reality.
Absolutely. That's the point with the Reality Caucus. Beta test it. See how these guys actually can work. Can they actually accomplish anything? Maybe we should just cancel and decide not to have an election at all if they can't do the job. Let's get another group, get that group over there, and we'll just bring them over here and try them out.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want something that works. Are you not fed up with stuff that doesn't work?
Yeah.
It's like...
Well, the fact that the war, the quote-unquote war in Iraq, is going on after 4 years, and it's worse now than it ever was.
Mm-hmm. And it only looks like it's getting worse.
Yeah. It's just totally, and now it's not even a war. It's just butchery. You know, it's just who can kill the most. And even though the American troops are doing good things over there, what do we see on television? What do you see on the news? You see American troops kicking down doors. And these Iraqis, Iraqis are very polite. And to have somebody come into their house and kick down their door is
that's horrifying.
Yeah, it's bad PR. And so when they show you on television these again and again and again, this door gets kicked down, that door gets kicked down. That if that's what's actually happening to the Iraqis, they're not winning hearts and minds. You know what happened was, when I was in Afghanistan, I talked to the USAID people, and they had all these wonderful programs, schools, healthcare, government on the entry level, like you were talking about, you know,
mm-hmm.
just like little block neighborhoods, grids, sewers, yada, yada, yada. And the neocons came in and said, no, we're not doing that. We're doing roads and military. And you know why they were doing roads and military?
To get the oil out.
Because Halliburton didn't make money when they were doing schools.
That's
and
really horrifying.
But it's simple. It's if you understand it on that level. If it's not making a profit for Halliburton, it's not happening.
That is so sad.
USAID people were just tearing their hair out. They didn't know what to do.
And, of course, we don't hear anything about that over here, except, of course, when you go over there and bring it back and tell us, which is a good thing. I'm certainly hoping that you get to go over there again, because that will be wonderful.
I hope so, too, because I want to go out in the red zone and find out what's happening. But also somebody said that 2 days after I went over, Bush made it illegal for any civilian to go to Iraq without a special visa. So maybe that's why.
He must not have liked you.
Maybe he did notice me after all. You can't get into
Iraq. How could anybody not notice you?
I don't know.
You know what we need? We need a granny meetup. I've talked about that a little bit, and, you know, we've talked about it a little bit. Don't you think that would be a good thing? Get the grannies together, and we'll all meet up, and we'll kick some, you know, kick
granny
them back to the curb. Do some, you know, granny ass kicking.
Melinda, just promise me one thing.
What?
We won't have Barbara Bush.
Ew,
our organizational
I don't think I like that idea, I have to tell you.
Well, she,
but let's plan on that.
She wouldn't want to bother her beautiful mind, so I think we're safe on that.
Yes, I think we're safe on that. Yeah, I think definitely she is not going to be included in our group.
Okay, good. We've got a plan.
Yes, we have a plan. And you know where? I think we should have it in Crawford, Texas, next autumn. And I think we need to get the, you know who the Raging Grannies are?
Yeah.
I think we need the Raging
great.
Grannies. We need the Warrior Grannies. We need the Crawford Peace House. Huh?
The Warrior. Is there such a thing as the Warrior Grannies?
Yes, they are, and they're Republicans who have decided they want to impeach Bush.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. I have to introduce you to them. Yes. They're really nice, delightful people. And y'all definitely have to introduce you. You'll like them. You'll get along.
Warrior Grannies with blue hair. Go us.
Go. So, and I really hope you're going to be back on your way to Iraq soon, because we need you over there.
Oh, yeah, and if anybody wants to... I just wrote a Mother's Day thing called Mother's Day, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So go to my blog, just Google Jane Stillwater, and go to my blog, and it's this insanely weird video that me and two of my kids made a couple of years ago. And I
that
finally
sounds
got
like
it,
fun.
I finally got it up on YouTube, and it's really funny, so... If anybody wants to check out my blog, and also on my blog there's all that stuff about my trip to Iraq.
Yeah, and we're gonna be thinking about you when you're on your way over there. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, my
and
pleasure.
And we're gonna hope and keep our fingers crossed and hope you're back over on the in Iraq soon, giving us the truth that we need.
Thank you for having me. And hello to everybody out there in Los Angeles or
all over the land.
Actually,
we have people listening in England, too.
Hi, England.
Yeah. Well, you take care, and God bless, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks.
Bye. Here at The Spiritual Politician, we're working to help individuals find the ideas that make all human organizing tools like government non-impactive on us as a people and to the world. Freedom means we can choose for ourselves the path we walk through life toward the truth each of us encounters at life's end. Because that path can be lonely, we reach out to each other along the way. On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that's America's mission statement. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that when any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom, and may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.